Eat Drink Indiana Radio is brought to you by Eskenazi Health, one of Central Indiana's leading providers of health care. Eat Drink Indiana Radio is powered by EatDrinkIndy.com, where Central Indiana turns to learn about food from farm to fork and drink from grains to glass.
Welcome to Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. Well, today on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, it's officially summer. Now, I know it hasn't felt much like summer recently. It's certainly been chilly this past week. But after all, it's Memorial Day weekend, time for the Indy 500, and it's the unofficial start of the summertime grilling season. So we'll be talking grilling with local chef, Ivy Tech culinary instructor, Dig-In executive director, and cookbook author Tom England, whose book The Idiot's Guide Grilling came out just last year. We'll also be talking about seasonal ingredients, menu changes, and the appeal of barbecue with Chef Ryan Nelson of Late Harvest Kitchen and the North End Barbecue and Moonshine. We'll check in with longtime Indy wine guy Dean Wilson about what he's been up to out in California. And we'll get a little holiday entertaining advice from local caterer Vicki Higuera of Three Figs. So stay with us here for more on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Well, as I mentioned earlier, Memorial Day kicks off summer, so even if it seems less than summery outside, that's our story here at Eat Drink Indiana Radio, and we're sticking to it, that the long weekend is the unofficial start of summer, which of course means cookouts, pitch-ins, and backyard barbecues. So we just had to talk grilling, and local chef, culinary instructor, Dig-In co-founder, and cookbook author Tom England was nice enough to sit down for a few minutes before the holiday weekend to talk about the appeal of the grill and the tools you need to step up your grilling game. So Memorial Day, it's the start of the grilling season for a lot of people. It starts to seem like summer. And of course we have, you know, here in Indianapolis, of course, there's the race and cookouts and pitch-ins and family get-togethers over the weekend. So what do you think about grilling? Does it have a season these days?
Oh, I don't think it has a season, but I think it has a heritage here in Indiana around the race. And, you know, we were talking that when I grew up, when you grew up, we would sit around the grill and listen to the race because it was never on TV, right?
That's
and
right.
So we
right. listen on the radio.
Yeah. So just sitting around listening to it as our parents would cook the overcooked steaks or whatever it be. And yeah. So I think it did have an official start then. But for me, it doesn't. I mean, I definitely grill year round.
So you're out. Are you out in the backyard in the snow? You know, sweeping the snow off the grill.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. You know, I shovel the driveway, but before I shovel the driveway, I actually shovel the back patio.
So you have a path to the grill cleared, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Now we were talking about grilling year round and your background, you know, in restaurants and that sort of thing. And tell me a little bit about upstate New York and grilling year-round.
Yeah, so in upstate New York, I was the general manager of a country inn, the only four-star, four-diamond country inn in the state at that time. And it, one of the locations we had on site was a jazz club. And that jazz club, we grilled everything on a Weber grill in the back of the restaurant itself. And so one of the stations would actually be out in the middle of the wintertime in upstate New York, actually grilling steaks on a Weber grill using good old Kingsford charcoal.
Oh, that's funny because you imagine, you know, grilling in a restaurant, they're in the back over a gas flame grill or something. But no.
You get that flavor, right? You got to get that good Kingsford charcoal flavor that is so nostalgic to a lot of people. And it's funny because I don't use Kingsford charcoal. I use lump charcoal. But, you know, people have that nostalgia around it.
You know, they do, you know, and I think that's probably why we kind of feel like we have a season. You know,
right.
It's summertime and it's time to grill out.
Right.
You know, so if people are indeed going to start grilling out right now, you know, it's finally warming up. What are some of the things, you know, that that people need? You know, are there, you know, tools and that sort of thing that people should make sure that they have?
Yeah, the first thing is getting that charcoal started, right? And so if you don't have, you know, if you have charcoal, which is what I prefer, you got to get the good charcoal first of all. So lump charcoal.
Now tell me why the lump charcoal is better.
Yeah, so lump charcoal is going to usually burn at a higher temperature, but it's also going to give a better flavor because it's coming from wood as opposed to compressed sawdust.
Okay, oh, I get it.
So Kingsford actually was invented by the Ford company. They were using leftover pallets and wanted to get rid of them, and so they started making briquettes out of it, and that's how Kingsford charcoal came around. So it's actually in Boston, Massachusetts, where they started that.
Well, that's it. I had no idea.
Yeah, it's a byproduct. It's their way of recycling. And so that's how it got developed. But and so in the meantime, you know, there's a lot of other stuff that goes into that, and so you get other things in it that you don't necessarily want. If you ever clean your grill after having briquettes, and sometimes you'll find lumps of rocks and other things that get compressed in with it. But with the true lump charcoal, it's pieces of wood. If you open the bag, it's just big hunks of limbs and stuff, and so that's what you want.
Now you also probably don't want the charcoal lighter fluid in there because people tend to just squirt the lighter fluid on, throw a match, and whoosh.
Right.
And then, of course, you get that lighter fluid flavor, right?
Right. And so, you know, the chimney starters, I used that for years. New trend is a fire starter that has an electric coil on it that you stick into the charcoal, but it also has a blower, so it blows the air through it and heats it up really quickly.
Now, that seems to be different from the electric starter that I remember my dad having in the past, which was just the coil, you know, right, that you plugged in and heated up. So the blower probably makes it go a lot faster.
Exactly, because you get that wind flow through there. So it's like the little billows of a fireplace at home and trying to get that started in the old days. But, yeah, it's just it looks like a hairdryer attached to it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you got to get the good charcoal. You got to get it started. Now, what are you cooking on? Do you use the traditional Weber kettle, or you know, the big green egg, or maybe a gas grill?
Yeah, it's
or all of the above.
I've got all the above. So I do have a big black Weber grill. I've got a big green egg, and we've got the gas grill as well. So depending on what I'm doing, sometimes I'll have stuff smoking on one, and you know, doing direct grilling on another. I made peach cobbler on Tuesday, so
peach cobbler on the grill?
Yeah, absolutely. Big cast iron or a Dutch oven with a cobbler in it. You can't beat those flavors, when it gets summertime, you want to be outside, you don't want to be inside, so yeah.
So I guess there's a purpose for each of the types, you know, the gas, that there is a reason to use a gas grill sometimes, and there's certainly reasons, you know, to use the regular, the charcoal kind of grills.
Yeah, and everybody has their own preferences, I think, we talk to any of the big green egg guys, they'll tell you that's the only thing you should be using, but I think there's a lot of variety in what you can do.
Because, of course, you know, the convenience, I suppose, is the big thing for the gas grills. Quick, right. You know, you turn it on and throw something on, and then it's done, right?
Yeah, and you don't have to fuss with trying to find the charcoal and get it lit and all of that other stuff. But, you just can't get the flavors from it.
Right. Yeah. And a lot of people want to fuss with the charcoal, and that's part of the enjoyment of it, right?
Yeah, it's like opening a bottle of wine. You know, that whole ritual of using the corkscrew to open the cork is something some people want. They never want to see the screw caps, but, you know, the charcoal is the same way. It's part of a ritual. It's part of a routine that really completes the whole sensation.
So the smoking, you know, is part of that too, you know, and so there are, you can add smoke to it with the wood chips, right, and that sort of thing, right?
Sure, yeah, and you know, the true smoking is a different process. It's lower temperatures, it's longer periods of time, it's tough cuts of meat. So, you know, true smoking is really a different type of technique, but yeah, it's still in that grilling, I guess.
You know, are there any other things that you really need? Oh, the one thing I think we've talked about in the past that you really need as far as tools go.
The thermometer. Yeah. So a meat thermometer. And one of the biggest things. So when people know I'm a chef, they first learn I'm a chef, there's two questions, right? Have I seen that show with that guy? That English guy, you know, and they can never remember his name, and I hate the show, so of course, you know, I know who he's talking about. But the other question is, you know, I was cooking this, and this was a problem. And so trying to play the food detective and trying to figure out what something was wrong. And it always goes back to people were cooking to a time and not a temperature.
Oh, you mean like they're like it's going to be on the grill for 10 minutes instead of what it's supposed to be up to regardless, right?
Correct. And the classic version of that is the turkey at Thanksgiving, right? So, you know, somebody says, oh, it's a 20-pound turkey. I need to cook it for, you know, 7 minutes per pound or whatever it is. I truly don't want to know what that number is. When in reality, they should be cooking it to 165 degrees, and that's the important part. So it's knowing that internal temperature of whatever you're cooking. So, yeah, finding a good thermometer that's calibrated so that you know it's the exact right temperature.
Now, what do you mean when you say calibrated? You just don't take it out of the package and put it on there? Or?
Yeah, exactly, because a lot of times in shipping and packaging, the calibration will be wrong. So, you know, freezing temperature is 32 degrees. And so if you were to stick that thermometer in a glass of ice water, it should say 32 degrees. And so you have to find out if it's actually 32 degrees, and that's the calibration part of it. And that could be based on the thermometer. Sometimes you can press a button if it's a digital. Sometimes it's turning in a nut on the bottom of it if it's a manual. But, yeah, you have to make sure that you know how much on or off that thermometer is before you start to use it.
Now, what types of thermometers are there? I mean, of course, we've seen the kind that you just, you know, stick in there and it doesn't have any bells and whistles. It just has a dial.
Right.
But I'm sure that there are others that are probably better. You know, what kind do you use?
Yeah, I mean, the one where you just kind of stick it in there and wane is called an InstaRead. And most chefs, that's what they use. And those are great thermometers. The other ones are the in-oven thermometers, and I have several of these that I use when I'm grilling. So with an in-oven thermometer, it goes into the meat itself, and then there's a cord that goes outside of the grill or outside of the oven, and you plug it into a digital readout, and it tells you in real time what that temperature is. And so you can leave it in the product throughout the cooking time. And it has a little alarm that will go off when it comes out to the right temperature. And so it takes all the guesswork out of it. You never really have to, you know, look at it. You never even have to open the grill if you don't want to.
Oh, that's the thing. You're not opening and shutting the grill all the time, which, of course, you know, lowers the temperature, lengthens the cooking time.
Right.
Oh, again, and that would mess and dries it out. So then that would be adding, you know, more time to your cooking so that there's a reason why things get overcooked maybe.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, if you go on to idiotsguide.com, that is a site that has a lot of quick guides. And so I just posted a quick guide on how to use a thermometer. And so if you just click in the search engine thermometer, it will come up there and will give you the whole idea of how to calibrate it and how to use it and everything.
We've been talking with Chef Tom England, author of The Idiot's Guide Grilling. You can find the book on Amazon.com and at local bookstores. Well, it's a long holiday weekend, and the odds are that you will be out in the backyard grilling this weekend. Memorial Day is second only to the 4th of July as the most popular grilling holiday. So for a little holiday grilling advice, we caught up with chef and cookbook author Tom England, whose 2014 book, The Idiot's Guide Grilling, spells out in detail and with loads of photos just what we should be doing when we fire up the grill. And what we shouldn't be doing. We talked with Tom recently about a few common grilling mistakes and about a few more uncommon items to cook on the grill. You have written The Idiot's Guide Grilling, right? So tell me a little bit about the book and what's in there, and then we'll get into a little advice.
Sure. The book has basically, I think, 150 recipes. It's a lot of recipes. And for every recipe, there's a picture, a color picture for every step. And so, it is truly a, you know, idiot's guide. If you want to learn how to cook a basic steak, that's in there. But it also goes into a lot more detailed stuff. So if you want to do a chocolate lava cake, there's a recipe for chocolate lava cake even. So, you know, smoking, there's meats, seafoods, vegetables, fruits, desserts, anything you can imagine.
Now, tell me about actually doing that. So, because you were doing this at your home, right? The photo shoot was at your home kitchen and your outdoor kitchen and that sort of thing?
Correct, yeah. So, if you can imagine all those recipes, trying to get them done in 3 days. So, 100 recipes in 3 days and a picture for every step. And so that would mean sometimes doing the recipe three or four times to get all the recipe pictures that you need. So, yes, we had every bit of space, every counter space, everywhere there was food, unbelievable amount of food, and trying to get those done in 3 days, which was absolutely crazy. So there's 600 pictures in the book.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so, and of course you need to take a lot more pictures to get it down to 600, but yeah, crazy.
What a process. Now, how long did it take you to write the book? You said you did all the recipes in 3 days. Was it a very lengthy process to research and write?
12 weeks. So from start to finish, from signing a contract to having all the pictures done, it was 12 weeks. And so it was a very quick process, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Now that just came out just a year ago.
Right.
So this is still a new book, and people can find it on Amazon.com. And
your favorite bookseller? Oh. And yeah, anywhere in town. If you go to any one of your booksellers, you should be able to find the book as well.
Now, what I would imagine there's plenty in there about what people should do and what they shouldn't do when they're grilling. What are some of the common mistakes maybe that people make?
So a couple of things. The first thing is you want to make sure the stuff is seasoned before you put it on the grill. The salt is the key thing here. So it has to be either kosher salt or sea salt. You can't use iodized salt.
And that would be just your regular salt shaker salt in the blue container that you see at the grocery store that we shouldn't be using.
Should not use it because you're creating a chemical reaction, and this is part of the cooking process. So if that hollow-celled salt, which is the kosher salt or the sea salt, is put onto the meat, then it will soak up some of the water. And therefore, when you put it on the heat, it will convert your proteins to sugars and then caramelize those sugars. And so you get more sweetness and umami character if you use the salt. If you don't use the salt, then you're not going to really develop that, they call it the Maillard principle. You're not going to create that umami in your product in the end. So you're going to have a lot more rich flavors from your meat if you salt it first.
Well, now that's interesting because I'm just guessing that in a lot of the seasoning blends that people buy at the grocery store, it's probably just plain salt.
Correct.
And not the sea salt or the right. coarse kosher salt. So already, even if they're using, you know, so-and-so chef's, you know, fancy blend, maybe they're not starting at a good point, even though they maybe think they are.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm amazed at how many people say, this is really good. What did you do to it? And I'm like, I just put salt on it. You know, you don't have to use all these fancy spice blends or whatever. I mean, the key here is just at that point, all you need is salt on there.
Okay, so if we get it seasoned right, so at least we've got a good start on it, right?
Right.
And so then, you know, what beyond that are we not doing?
Before you put it on the grill, you're going to make sure the grill is clean, right? So using the wire brush to clean it off, and then using a oiled rag or oiled towel to wipe that off so that you're not putting the dirt onto your food. And then oil the meat before you put it on the grill. And so the oil will, it's not to help it from sticking. That's not the point of that at all. The oil on the meat itself is to help, again, create that Maillard principle that caused that browning process. So if you don't oil your meat when you put it on the grill, most of the time you're going to get good grill marks on there from the tines themselves on the grill that are hot, but you're not going to get any browning in between those tines. It'll cook it through there. It'll look gray or, you know, light brown, but you're never going to get that nice brown color from the charring that you want to get, again, because that's going to create that Maillard principle. It's going to create the caramelization that you want to get from the umami and the sugars in the product itself.
So salt the meat, then oil it.
Yeah, yeah, because if you oil it first, then you put the oil on or the salt on top, it's never really going to be touching the meat itself. And a lot of times it'll just run off with the oil.
Okay, now that makes sense when you say that, but I really would have done it the other way if I hadn't really thought about it. Okay, so
that's the same thing with the I see people that are frying stuff or sauteing stuff, and they'll say, "Oh, the flour seasoned." I'm like, but you don't want to flour the season. You want to flour or season the meat. So, you know, the first thing you've got to do with anything is season the meat before you do anything else to it.
You know, I think this is probably why people tell you, oh, that tastes so good, because they're not doing that at home.
Right, yeah. And you know, you're producing food that you want people to taste the meat, right? And so start with that as the foundation and then think about how you're going to add the flavor to the meat.
Okay, so beyond that, so we have it seasoned, we have it oiled. Any other things that we should be doing that we're not?
Yeah, don't worry about it. Right, right. So if you start to pick up the meat and it's sticking to the grill, that means that it hasn't caramelized yet. So give it a couple minutes. Don't try to force it off and tear the meat apart, especially with fish. I see people try to grill fish and it just ends up like a flaky mess. So once it's on the grill itself, let it set, and then halfway through, flip it over. You should never have to turn a meat over more than once, right?
Okay, I think that's what people are doing all wrong because they want to do something with it. You know, they've got the tongs in their hands and they're scooting it around or something. Yeah.
That's the time you're supposed to be enjoying the beer.
Okay.
Okay, so yeah, put it on the grill, drink half your beer, and then go back to it.
So I'm guessing that would probably go a long way toward a successfully grilled whatever it is.
Yeah, and a very happy chef.
Right. Well, right. So then you can enjoy yourself while you're there. You know,
and your guests. Right. And that's what it's all about.
Are there some suggestions maybe that people could kind of go beyond the burgers and dogs?
Yeah, you know, again, in the book we cover everything. So if you want to do fish or shrimp. I love shrimp on the grill, and again, so easy to do, and so fast. I mean, 2 minutes, your shrimp is going to be done on the grill. And so, you know, skewer some shrimp and offer those to your guests, and they'll love it. And you know, fish is again very quick.
But I think that's intimidating to people because they're afraid they're going to overcook it or it's going to fall apart or you know.
Yeah. If you stick with the salmon or tuna, even swordfish, some of those fattier fish. They hold together. They don't fall apart. That's why you see those on menus in restaurants all the time, right? Yeah. And they're easier for them to do in restaurants in large amounts. So,
Now, you mentioned that in the book there are desserts and fruit. Now, that's probably an option people aren't thinking about all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. So the peach cobbler that I did on Tuesday, I mean, that's in the book. And it's, you know, just putting peaches and some granola and on top of it and putting it on the grill. Leaving it set for about 20 minutes, and you get this great peach cobbler. And you know, think about a nice cookout, and people are eating. And as you take the meat off, then just put the cobbler on there, turn it off even at that point, and just let it sit there and get warm. And by the time people are done with their burgers and brats or fish and chicken, you know, well, you can pull that off at that point and have this great warm cobbler to serve. Scoop a little ice cream on it, even better.
We've been talking with Chef Tom England, author of The Idiot's Guide Grilling. Look for the cookbook in local bookstores or at Amazon.com. Eat Drink Indiana Radio is made possible with support from Eskenazi Health. With its 315-bed hospital and inpatient facilities and 11 community health centers located throughout Indianapolis. EskenaziHealth.edu. Well, I know I have certainly been looking forward to spring and summer actually arriving in all their local food glory. I'm thinking strawberries and rhubarb and the asparagus that you'll find at farmers markets right now. But what do chefs look forward to? Or what do they get tired of? I posed those questions to Ryan Nelson recently, chef owner at Late Harvest Kitchen and the North End Barbecue and Moonshine, which is just about to mark its one-year anniversary. And though there's not too much that he's tired of, there's lots to look forward to. It's May, and I think people are starting to think of barbecue and stuff like that. What's going on with it, right?
Sure. I think with both restaurants, spring is a time of rebirth, and there's more ingredients that were, you know, available now. And I think we're kind of awakening from a long winter, and we've definitely seen it business-wise. Mid-April through mid-October is kind of our best season.
So can you really tell, you know, does the warm weather really bring people out?
Definitely. We have two large patios at both restaurants, and that increases the size of the restaurant at Late Harvest by almost 40%, here by about 35%. So it's significant more amount of people. I think people go out for lunch more when it's nice.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that, but you're probably right.
So lunch business has definitely been up the last couple of weeks. So it's a great time of year. We love it. Like it's, yeah, this is, we got to make hay when the sun shines.
So how does the seasonality affect things like barbecue?
I think just that good weather, you know, people are more apt to, you know, go out. And I think the communal nature of barbecue, we're kind of surprised where, we have a lot of like 6 tops and 8 tops and 10 tops and 20 tops where people go out together for barbecue.
Oh, now that's kind of a fun idea, right?
A lot of families, yeah, which is nice. Like seeing a lot of kids here and stuff like that. And I think it's a generational thing too. Like it's from kids to, you know, I mean, old people. Everybody likes barbecue.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, everybody likes barbecue. So,
well, now tell me at Late Harvest, you know, how the menu changes, you know, with this time of year.
Sure. Well, it's definitely that time of year where we're seeing rhubarb and ramps, and I've got rabbit back on the menu. And the last couple days of some rainy weather, we were seeing some morels. So I can do my rabbit morel dish, which I'm excited about. But, yeah, it's like all the stuff is starting to happen, English peas, favas. So it's asparagus.
Do you have any favorites, any favorite spring ingredients that you look forward to?
Morels are my favorite. Are they? Yeah, that's been my favorite since I was a kid. I just like to toss them with a little bit of egg, a tiny bit of flour, and then just, like, cook them in butter and herbs and, like, little, like, morel-like fritter kind of pan, you know, pan sauce. Yeah.
So do you ever hunt them yourself?
I do.
Oh, do you really?
Yep. Yeah, definitely. I didn't last year, but the year before and the year before that, I had a backpack kind of apparatus for my son, and the two of us would go out, and we had pretty good luck.
You know, it's one of those things that people seem to get really into, you know, the whole mushroom hunting and morels. It's like the holy grail. You know, they're always out there trying to find a place and not wanting to tell where they're finding them, right?
Yeah, I'm not going to disclose where I go. I have found some right in the city, though, right along the river, though. Yeah. Yeah, we used to live in Broad Ripple, and I would look around the river, and we had pretty good luck. And there's no greater feeling than, like, kind of happening upon, like, a big grouping.
Once you get through a season, are you sick of one thing and ready to move on to another?
I don't think I really tire of anything. I tire of, like, winter, where you're just like, I'm done with turnips, I'm done with rutabagas, I'm done with radishes. I'm kind of over gluten-free. Yeah, I'm tired of that. It's like, oh, you're gluten-free, but you're eating our bread plate. Okay, cool. You're having the sticky toffee pudding. Okay, right. You're gluten-free. Yeah. That would be the only thing that I think that's and that's pretty universal.
So what do you look forward to? Are there other ingredients coming on that you look forward to and that you're anxious to work into the menu?
Salmon season. I love wild salmon season. Oregon started last week. California starts, I think, this week or next week. Alaska is a couple weeks out. And, you know, we'll have it on, you know, both menus all summer long. Yeah. I'd love to go back to Alaska.
Yeah. Now, you've done that, right?
Yeah, several times. Yeah. It's been a few years, but I would love to get back there and do some fishing. You bet.
We've been talking with Chef Ryan Nelson of Late Harvest Kitchen and the North End Barbecue and Moonshine. Look for information on the restaurants at lateharvestkitchen.com and at thenorthendbbq.com, or you can find the restaurants on Facebook. You know, I've been covering local food in Indianapolis for a long time now, and I've met so many terrific people along the way, and in so many different situations, at restaurants, or cocktail bars, in home kitchens, at farms and farmers markets. But there's one local figure that I actually met at a pie contest. Dean Wilson, a restaurant and wine guy that you might know from Dino's Vino in Fountain Square. Well, I met him out at Beasley's Orchard at an apple pie contest years ago. And since then, we've regularly talked about food and wine and about the great stuff happening on Indy's ever-expanding restaurant scene. But in the past couple of years, we've talked more and more about Dino's own dreams, his dream of going to California and making wine himself, which he's actually been doing. And now he's getting ready to bring his very own wines, called Scribble Scribble Wines, into the local market early next year. I caught up with Dino when he was in town recently. He's also the director of fine wine for local company Rhodes Beverage and was doing some tastings at local restaurants with the guys from Rhodes. And I got a chance to find out what he's up to. So during a backyard cookout at his dad's house on Indy's South Side recently, we talked about his background in Indianapolis, how he decided to head to California, the wines he's making for his own label, Scribble Scribble Wines, and what it's like living the dream. What are you doing out in California? Kind of walk me through it.
Everything that's legal so far.
Right, so you were gonna actually gonna be out there working in wineries, living the dream, right? Yeah. With the goal of starting your own winery, right?
So when I was on the back deck on the south side and I was talking to you, I think I kind of put it in perspective, and you're like, just go do what you say you're gonna do and live your dream. And you're very positive for me. But I kind of followed that dream. I did. And it was, I want to go work at a winery. I want to do production. I want to work at another winery in Napa and get the history and learn how to teach and educate their style. And then third, I wanted to help an opening winery get their stuff going, do tours, do education to the staff. And all that was implemented within a year. The only hiccup was when I was out there and I was crushing, I lost my mom. You know, she had cancer, right? Sucks. Yeah. And, so when I came back in January, the thing that she said to me was, Dean, I want you to be successful and happy. And this was about 2 weeks before she passed. So I took that to heart. I really took that to heart. And for that, it meant follow my dream. And so the move was difficult because I was leaving something that I really loved.
You had the restaurant, you had a shop, yeah. Dino's Vino, people yeah. know you from that.
Yeah.
And so you left that.
I did. I love the wine aspect. I love the education part about it. And I beg to anybody go back to any old interview. And the thing that's primary and primordial was education. And I look at every interview that I did, you know, and sometimes you get softy and you get reminisced about every 10, 15 years, you look at it. And that's what I did. I looked at these interviews and what it said was, you know, education. He's educating people, but I've always had the staple, and it was like, I want to educate people like a Hoosier. We know about corn and soybean out here, and I tell the same story out in Napa, and it's like, flip the script. Grapes on a vine, it's byproduct, it's a natural produce off the vine. What we do with that grape afterwards is beautiful. What the winemaker does with it is ingenious. What the vineyard manager does with it is the most necessary, nutriating the vine. So I'm a vine geek. I'm a soil geek without being a geologist. You know, I want to get in the terroir, the soil. I want to know the complexity. I want to know the region. I want to know that. There's two fashions at looking at wine. You can look at it in the negative view, and that's like a different view, or you can look at it as in a positive view. And you can look, my thing is, that people always ask, what's your favorite varietal? And I'm like, whatever varietal it is, as long as it expresses its terroir, where it's from.
Right.
And that's important. And now I'm making my own wine.
So tell me what you're doing out there in California.
Living, watching my daughter grow. She's 6 months, Lucille Ann. She's awesome. I'm building a portfolio. It's called Bella Lucy, named after my daughters. Translates into beautiful lights in Italian. You know, and there it's a Napa Valley Fine Wine Collection. It's B Sellers, it's Bone Christiani, it's Pina, it's Tudal, it's Scott Harvey, it's Rudius, it's wineries with distinction, Napa Valley Wine Company. The deal is you have to be family owned and operated, and you got to make less than 20,000 cases annually.
So you're building a portfolio mm-hmm. of wines yeah. that you represent.
Yeah.
And you have been back to Indianapolis several times, you know, and so you're repping these wines, but you're also then going to be producing your own wines. Is that right?
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
tell me about that.
So my son Max came to me at 8 years old. He's 11 now, 3 years ago. And he said, Dad, here's a piece of art I made for you. He brought back this piece of art and it was it was a black bottle done with a white label. And the white label was tattered, and it was like 3x5. And it had two scribble marks on it and the cursive wine. And I go, what is this? And I go, I know it's a bottle of wine, but what is this? And the label. And he goes, Dad, easy. Scribble, scribble, wine. And I looked at him, and I said, every scribble tells a story.
Now, you have always been a foodie. So tell me a little bit about your background in Indianapolis and local food and how you kind of got to where you are now.
The background of local food, I mean, Dino's Vino started in 2002. I was working at Kona Jack's in 2000, from 1999 to 2001. And, you know, I had this idea and I wanted to do my own wine thing and I wanted to do it in Fountain Square. And at the time it was the place that was up and coming, the promises of what's now there.
Well, it's finally come along, right? So it's finally reached, you know, kind of what people probably said.
Beautiful. You know, that's kind of like what I'm doing in Oakland right now in California. But my dreams in Indianapolis were to showcase slow food movement. You know, we tried to buy from local purveyors as much as we could, seasonal fresh. We didn't carry ranch dressing. We didn't do ketchup or deep fried foods.
So this is all the things that we're seeing right now that you were doing some time ago, right?
Yeah. We had a great chef. We had a great staff. We had good people. We were a little rustic. We weren't polished. It was beautiful.
So you were in Fountain Square before it had really come on, right? So there was a lot of promise to Fountain Square.
2002.
Yes. So you were there more than 10 years ago.
And Peter George, 13 years ago, Peter George was there. Bistro 936. I mean, he was awesome. The stuff he was doing, Chris Ely was there. Not a lot of people. You did this history thing. Chris Ely was there. And Chris Ely was there, and he was just kicking it. And he was a young man. And then he moved out and went up to Chicago after that closed.
That's right.
And he'd been over at my place, and Chris was a big supporter. And I love Chris. And then when he comes back from Chicago, him and his wife and the children and the whole progression of Smoking Goose and to see where he's at, that just does my heart good. And to say I know that boy, I go, that's my boy, Blue. But my focus was always what it's always been, faith, family, and friends. And it's the three Fs. And it's focus as well. It's like I had a goal at the end of the day, and that was to focus on what my main goal was, and that was to make wine.
So now you are out in California. You are really doing this. You are really out in California, living the dream, making wine.
And picked my first Zin in 2014.
So how cool is that? So tell me a little bit about that and what people can expect to see.
I'm sitting down at Michael David Winery. I'm having their wine. I'm tasting it, and I taste this Earthquake Petite Syrah of Lodi, and I'm like, this stuff is killer. Good fruit, good mid-palate, good finish. Not over the top on alcohol, 14.9, which is common for Zin. And Lodi's known for fruit bombs. This thing spoke of the earth. The guy next to me was wearing his hat, you know, kind of grumpy, frumpy looking dude. And he goes, well, thank you. And I'm like, what? And he goes, yeah, I'm the grower. My name's Steve Perrin. I shook his hand. He hands me his business card. And on the back of it, it's got freaking rows and vines per how many square feet you do it. Come to find out, he made the number one Petite Syrah for Michael and David, voted by the wine growers and the winemakers in Lodi. So Joel Peterson sources it off of him. And I found this out after the fact. I picked my first wine. And Michael David does, and another winery, and now myself. So when I went to him, I did a handshake deal, and I said, well, I want, and right there at that moment, I said, I want to buy Zin and Petite from you. So then he said, okay. And he says, how much you want? And I said, well, I'm going to start off small. I want about 120 cases, so I need about 3 tons. He goes, each? And I said, yeah. And he goes, deal. Shook my hand, invited me out, followed him out right then, went out and looked at the vineyard, and the guy behind the place goes, he's got pristine vineyards. So I said, killer. Went out there, looked at him. I said, deal. And I said, I want the back four rows. Back four rows. So when I parked my car, it was like the crossroads. Zin to my right, Petite Syrah to my left. Here I am, stuck in the middle again. And I had the back four rows. So I'm on my bottle, it'll say, Perrin Farms, Lodi, back four rows.
So now tell me what people can expect. So so they'll be able to get Scribble Scribble Wines next year, right?
2016, January 1st. We're doing pre-sales probably in the market around October, November. We're bringing back barrel samples to do pre-sales on.
And so that's October, November this year, right?
Yeah, because that's a pre-sale. We got to sell it for January. And it's been in barrel for probably about, at that point, about 12 months, 13 months. And then it's going to sit in bottle for about 3 months. It's Zin and Petite Syrah, single vineyard, hand-picked. Scribble Scribble is my dream, and now it's here.
So by late this year, we'll be able to try some of these wines, and you'll be bringing them into the market in 2016. Is that right?
Yeah. First one's going to be, though, Bellaboo. We're going to bottle it under Scribble Scribble, Muscat Canelli, Bellaboo. And Bellaboo is the Muscat Canelli because she's sweet and sassy, kind of like her daddy.
So then what else do you have? What else do you bring into the market?
The Zinfandel single vineyard is going to be called Lucille, after my daughter, kind of like B.B. King. God rest your soul, sir. He named his guitar Lucille. Zin is my inspiration. It is my muse. And that's what I'm out there for. So my Zinspiration had to be called Lucille, and that's my six-month-old right now. And so she's my baby. She's beautiful. She's awesome.
And so that's the wine you'll be bringing out next year, right?
And then Petite Syrah is called the Max, after my son.
So this is your older boy, right?
Middle. Uh-huh. I got two boys, two girls. And then Colton is a Marine out there in San Diego.
Oh, my gosh.
And he's 20, and I'm calling that one his next year's vintage, and it's going to be called Leatherneck.
Oh, my goodness. That's terrific.
And it's going to be a big cab from Rutherford. It'll have those chalky, leathery, cocoa, dark fruit tastings. Do you see where I'm going with this?
I see where you're going with this.
You don't need a marketer. You don't need to pay a marketing agent. You just need to speak the truth these days. And as of 2013, I've promised that I've only will do anything that's positive in nature and support that. I'm putting all negative behind and looking forward to just making my life and my family's life and my friend's life that much easier and that much funner and that much friendlier. Serious.
We've been talking with longtime Indianapolis wine guy Dean Wilson, who now has his Bella Lucy Napa Valley Fine Wine Collections with Rhodes Beverage, and he is also making his own Scribble Scribble wines. For more information on what Dean is up to, look for him on Facebook. Eat, Drink Indiana Radio is made possible with support from Eskenazi Health, providing care to nearly 1 million outpatient visitors each year with the mission to advocate, care, teach, and serve at its hospital and inpatient facility and 11 community health centers located throughout Indianapolis. EskenaziHealth.edu. Well, we are certainly in the celebration season. We're just past Mother's Day. We have graduations coming up. We're in the middle of the Memorial Day long weekend. And we're looking ahead, of course, to June and Father's Day and weddings. And, well, you get the idea. There's a lot going on. And that means there's a good chance you'll be having company. But it doesn't mean that you have to stress out about it. I spent a little time in the kitchen with caterer Vicky Higuera of Three Figs to talk about low-stress entertaining, and we ended up out on the patio enjoying a few easy appetizers that are perfect for just about any get-together. I've been thinking about the fact that it is springtime. There's a lot of entertaining opportunities coming up, and I wanted some advice on how you can handle some of these occasions a little bit easier without too much cooking, without too much trouble. So anyway, Vicky's going to offer some advice and an easy recipe. So tell me what it is that we have here.
We are going to try some carciofoda, which is the Italian word for artichokes. And I have been making this little version of carciofoda for about 15 years now. It was an original recipe from Mario Batali. And the first time I tried it, when I saw it, it was like, ooh, that sounds delicious. And I love artichoke hearts. So I'm always looking for something to do with them. And so we came up with this. My friend Susan and I kind of adjusted it all those years ago. And it is by far one of the more popular items that we had on the catering menu for years. So it's my go-to.
Well, now, so tell me what is in it in addition to the artichoke hearts.
We have artichoke hearts, golden raisins. You may use currants. You can use any kind of dried fruit that really appeals to you. I like the sweetness of the golden raisin in there. And it also has sun-dried tomatoes and pine nuts, a little bit of chili flake. And then at the end of it, and some balsamic vinegar, and red onion. And at the end of it, you mix in some basil and some mint and some Italian parsley. And that kind of lightens it and gives it a fresher flavor. The one thing I do like about this salad is it can be used as an antipasto. It can be used as a salad. You can toss it with pasta, and it becomes a main dish. You also, my family loves when I take some pancetta and chunk that up and toss in some crispy pancetta with it, too. The beauty of the salad, you can serve it warm right when it first gets done. You can serve it at room temperature. You can serve it cold. And it does, after it has sat for several hours, it does, the flavors really start to develop. And it's very, very good for breakfast. I can attest to that.
So is it hard to make?
It's very easy to make. It's very basic skills. Nothing hard about it. You've got more time in chopping than you actually do in cooking. So it is saute off your onions, then kind of mix in all the rest of it and let that simmer for, 8-10 minutes, something like that. Kind of meld those flavors together. Then take it off the heat, throw in the balsamic vinegar and all of the fresh herbs, and toss it up, and there you have it.
So now, I think you have talked to me before over the years about cooking from your pantry and having a well-stocked pantry being the key to easy entertaining. So this sounds like some of these things are items I should have in my well-stocked pantry.
Absolutely. And I have my top 10 list of things that I think should be in everybody's pantry. And when you have a well-stocked pantry, you can cook fresher, healthier, more flavorful. So I like to have smoked almonds of some descript. They can be roasted and salted. They can be smoked. They can be, you can even do pecans or walnuts if you don't like almonds. I happen to prefer almonds. So I also like the Spanish Marcona style almonds, which the ones that are, they are different from American almonds in that they are already shelled, per se. And I love the ones that are mixed with rosemary and sea salt. The next one that everybody should have is roasted red peppers, a jar of roasted red peppers. Or, if you have the time, roast up your own red peppers. They're starting to go bad, or yellow, or green, or orange, or whatever peppers you have in your vegetable crisper there that are starting to go. But everybody should have a jar of roasted red peppers in their pantry. Some sort of interesting mustard. Honey Cup is my all-time favorite go-to. But then local folks' food, Stone Ground Mustard, is by far one of the best Stone Ground Mustards I've tried in a really long time. So love theirs. And then a good Dijon, because a good Dijon is going to be the base of all kinds of dips for you. Mustards, aiolis, that kind of stuff. You can always add in the Dijon. So have some interesting mustards around. Cornichons, which are little tiny French pickles. They, again, you can get them from a very low price point to a very expensive price point. They're beautiful. They're done with herbs de Provence and little tiny pearl onions and the cornichons. They pair extremely well with any kind of salami, but particularly country pâtés, that kind of stuff that are rich. Some of that vinegar base cuts down, cuts through the acidity, cuts through the richness of the meats. So I always have those. Olives, any kind of mix, whether it is some sort of really cool mixed, stuffed mix, whether it's blue cheese or garlic or, habanero peppers or whatever it may be. Don't be afraid to try just little bits and pieces of those, and they will stay fresh in your refrigerator for a month. So, and jarred olives you can have on the shelf for 6 months. Once you open them, stick them in your fridge, but they'll be in your pantry for a long time. Dried fruit of some sort, of some descript, whether it's dates or figs, are probably the two most user-friendly ones and the most used ones. They're always there. Some sort of honey, a cheese honey or a raw honey, but a drizzling honey of some sort. Balsamic glaze. I have a couple of favorites of that. You can make your own balsamic glaze, but it takes hours and hours and hours of time. There's a couple of really good ones on the market. Why not use those? Any type of cheese preserves, or like I mentioned, the Gracious Gourmet has one, a spiced cherry that is delicious. American Spoon Foods Sour Cherry Spoon Fruit has been my go-to for 20 years with fresh cheeses. So that's kind of the top of what I think you should have in your pantry. But also, try some grains. And don't, please don't do that on the maiden voyage of I'm going to have 25 people over for dinner tomorrow night. I'm going to try this new salad. Try it out on your family ahead of time. My favorite grain for the past couple of years has been an Italian farro. It's F-A-R-R-O. Much more widely available than it used to be. And it holds well with all kinds of different add-tos. My add-to right now is roasted red pepper, Kalamata olives, some fresh mozzarella, basil, pine nuts, which all of those things, if you will think back to the you know, this is your quiz part. Think back to what we just talked about. Three of those things are already in your pantry. If you have 15 minutes, and the farro should be in your pantry too. If you have 15 minutes, run to the store, grab some chicken thighs, grill those off, throw them in, and some either local arugula or local spinach or something like that, and you've got a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful salad.
Well, now you have me all inspired. I will go home. I will make this wonderful recipe that I can tell you is really terrific. We are putting it on baguette slices right now. So that's terrific, although I do see that it would be terrific tossed with pasta. I think that would be great. So I'll have to make this. And you can find the recipe for this on my website, eatdrinkindie.com. We'll also have Vicki's list of the 10 things you should have in your pantry, the things you should pick up from the grocery store if you have a few minutes to run to the store. So don't be afraid to try some new things and to enjoy this season of entertaining, I suppose, since we're leading up into the summertime months. Any other advice for people as they're thinking about what they can stay stocked up on and what they can create pretty quickly in the kitchen?
Don't be intimidated by, oh, what am I going to do for 20 people? It's not a whole lot different than making something for three or four of your best friends. You just have to increase the amount a little bit. And remember, they're coming to celebrate. So it's a celebration. They're coming to celebrate something. So whether it is a graduation or a wonderful mom or a not-so-wonderful mom, however you want to celebrate, don't let it intimidate you into not trying something new.
Well, I think that's terrific advice. So again, you can look for the recipes at eatdrinkindie.com and try some advice from Vicki Higuera of Three Figs Catering.
We've been talking with caterer Vicki Higuera about easy entertaining here on WFYI and WFYI.org. You've been listening to Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD to the Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. Thank you so much for tuning in this week and kicking off summer with us, despite the recent chilly temperatures. And thanks also to our guests this week, Chef Tom England of Ivy Tech Dig In and the author of The Idiot's Guide Grilling, Ryan Nelson, chef owner at Late Harvest Kitchen and the North End Barbecue and Moonshine, Dean Wilson of Rhodes Beverage and Scribble Scribble Wines, and caterer Vicki Higuera of Three Figs. And thanks also to producer John Ketzenberger for helping to bring you Eat Drink Indiana Radio.